At this time of year, typically this store would be open by appointment only, and I'd be laid off. And this year, we've hardly had time for a coffee break.
The surge in wood stove sales across the state. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 22nd of August. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, testing out hydrokinetic power in rural Alaska.
We always knew going into Alaska that ice presented a tremendous challenge.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Alaska has set a deadline for filing claims for anyone who has been sexually abused or injured by priests or anyone working for the Fairbanks Diocese. The deadline is December 2, 2008. Claim forms are available online at dioceseoffairbanks.org or by calling 1-888-570-6269. This message is sponsored by the Catholic Bishop of Northern Alaska.
State wildlife officials say a brown bear was hit and injured by a vehicle on the edge of downtown Anchorage early this morning. Anchorage police shot and killed the 700-pound bear. The bear was hit after it emerged from the Chester Creek Trail and crossed Gamble Street. The shift from oil to wood heat has spiked demand for stoves and heightened pollution concerns. John Crouch with the Hearth, Patio, and Barbecue Association says there's a national shortage of pellet-fired stoves and boilers and some cordwood models. Crouch says that's hitting hard in places where winter comes early, like Alaska.
If you wait to the last minute in Alaska, it's going to be tough. I know that the retailers in Alaska throughout the state, Fairbanks all the way down to the Panhandle, are beginning to book deliveries and installations in December and January.
Crouch recently visited Fairbanks to consult with North Star Borough officials about fine particulate pollution. Borough air quality specialist Jim Connor says he expects exceptionally poor conditions this winter due to the high number of wood furnaces and stoves going in. He says the borough is getting a lot of questions about the increasingly popular but often smoky outdoor wood boilers.
We're getting two different types of calls. We get a lot of calls from people considering purchasing one of these and, are there going to be any upcoming regulations? And the other types of calls we get are people who see these units delivered to their neighbors and they want to know what they can do about it.
A city advisory committee will be considering the wood boiler issue next month. The only local smoke control measure in the works is aimed at wood stoves. Glenn Miller with the borough says the wood stove buyout program will target older, more polluting stoves.
Where we would obtain federal money to replace older wood stoves with newer wood stoves that were EPA certified or had catalytic combustion process on it to clean the air.
In Homer, the sale of wood is also increasing as more people order and install wood stoves. KBBI's Emily Schwing reports.
Saw Sisters is a three-year-old Homer-based business. They specialize in tree maintenance and landscaping. But co-owner Anna Ryan Matney says this year they're also selling the wood from trees they cut down.
We haven't really done a lot of firewood sales. This is our first year that we've really decided to push it. A lot of people have asked us for it, but It's easy to get into the market, but it's a lot of work.
Ryan Matney says she expected an increase in demand for wood, but she says she's surprised that people haven't realized the price of wood has increased as well.
It's been interesting because the price of wood has gone up, and people, they're surprised with the price of wood that we're saying, and we're selling it at the average price.
On the Lower Kenai Peninsula, birch is currently selling for $200 a cord unsplit. Birch burns a lot longer than spruce, which is selling for about $175 a cord. Since last year, the price of birch has gone up by about 15%, and spruce prices have increased by close to 30%. Ryan Matney says between felling trees and now firewood, she's worried the Saw Sisters could get too busy.
With the wood sales, yeah, for sure. We don't have enough birch we've already gotten a list of people and we're not sure if we're going to be able to give it to everybody that we've got the list for. Everybody, a lot of people that I met this year are putting in wood stoves.
That's where Barrett Fletcher comes in. He's the sales manager at VBS Heating, LLC in Homer. VBS sells and services monitor oil heaters and four lines of wood stoves. Fletcher shows me a chart of price comparisons for wood and heating oil.
Here's the cost of the stuff you buy, and here's the per unit cost per million BTUs. So about $20 per million BTUs of spruce through a modern wood stove.
Okay.
So it's a little bit less than half, or right around half the cost of fuel.
I stopped in at VBS about 2 weeks ago, but both Fletcher and owner Mark Vial asked that I hold off on producing my story. Two of the three employees at the shop were headed out of town on vacation. Fletcher said they've had so much business this summer that any extra attention might be too much to handle.
At this time of year, typically this store would be open by appointment only, and I'd be laid off. And this year, we've hardly had time for a coffee break. There's just been so much traffic, so many people in looking at wood stoves.
Reporting in Homer, I'm Emily Schwing.
Rural Alaska is on its way to having a new form of electricity. Hydrokinetic generation is similar to Southeast Alaska's hydropower, but without the dams. A Texas-based energy company is working toward obtaining permits to install their generators into many sites around the state. KDLG's Adam Kane has the story.
Both tidal flows and rivers around Alaska are currently being studied for their possibilities of generating cheap, renewable hydrokinetic power. One company preparing to set up hydrokinetic generators throughout Alaska and the continental U.S. is Texas-based HydroGreen Energy. HydroGreen's Vice President of Governmental Affairs and Media Relations, Mark Stover, would like to work with Alaskans in order to enhance hydrokinetic technology.
We hope that we're able to move forward in a collaborative fashion on all of these projects with those who have long lived in and served the state of Alaska.
As with any type of power generation, there are some initial concerns for some Alaskans. One issue that has arisen is a question of permitting rights for development in the waterways. Many potential power providers are concerned that outside companies will own all the rights to produce hydrokinetic energy in Alaska. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is responsible for issuing permits to both study and develop specific sites, as FERC spokeswoman Celeste Miller explains.
We have issued permits for some areas in Alaska for these hydrokinetic projects. If you have a preliminary permit, it gives the holder of the permit the ability to study that particular site over which they have the permit for 3 years to determine if they want to develop it.
Once the waterway is initially permitted, there are regulations in place forcing the entity that retains the 3-year permit to periodically report on their studies to the commission in order to avoid a site being tied up and unused. Simply receiving the preliminary permit does not grant the holder the rights to begin generating power.
If the holder of the permit chooses to pursue the site and they want to develop it, they would need to file a license application at FERC, which is a separate process.
Never before in the United States has there been hydrokinetic power generation licensed for commercial use. Because of this, little is known about the potential environmental impacts, making their first generation site a valuable source of information.
Impacts on fish. We're going to study the impacts on water quality in terms of dissolved oxygen, turbidity, and temperature. So we think that by using the Minnesota project, we'll be armed with a large amount of data that will be highly valuable as we try to move forward in Alaska.
The Minnesota project Stover is referring to is HydroGreen's premier commercially operational and soon to be federally licensed hydrokinetic power project in Hastings, Minnesota. The first of its kind in the United States when it begins operation this October. HydroGreen is anticipating one of the foremost concerns of many rural Alaskans, interference with their fish stocks.
What we're going to do in the state of Minnesota is perform a comprehensive cutting-edge fish mortality test, so we will know with very clear results what happens to fish when they encounter our units.
Also a concern for hydrokinetic generation is the extreme winters in Alaska, a season that nearly ensures this technology will not be able to immediately replace the existing utilities.
We always knew going into Alaska that ice presented a tremendous challenge, and I think the more we have learned, the more we've come to realize that in all likelihood we'll have a seasonal renewable energy product. We still think that brings great benefit to the area.
HydroGreen Energy has proposed numerous sites in 7 states and has already applied for permits at 9 sites around Alaska. In Dillingham, I'm Adam Kane.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, making the trek to the Democratic National Convention from Barrow.
I'm probably the first whaler to ever go to a
a convention like this.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo. Manage accounts, pay bills, and get instant loan decisions online at wellsfargo.com. The next stage. And by the Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
While most eyes are on the Republican battle between Senator Ted Stevens and Dave Cuddy in this Tuesday's primary, they aren't the only candidates vying for the once uncontestable Senate seat. APRN's Eli Meneker reports on four others looking to represent Alaskans in the Senate.
Probably the most familiar name among the four is Vic Vickers. With a staggering media blitz in only a few months, Vickers has quickly gained household name recognition. The Florida-raised economic historian, lawyer, and businessman recently moved to Alaska as a permanent resident to run against Ted Stevens. Vickers says putting a stop to political corruption is not just the most important issue in this election.
It's the only issue. It not only defines my campaign, it defines Alaska. And until Ted Stevens is removed from the United States Senate by the people of Alaska, this great state is never going to be able to move forward, and the people of Alaska will never be able to gain their fair share of oil revenues.
Vickers says Alaskan dependence on Stevens is misplaced.
You know, all this talk about how Alaska cannot live without Ted Stevens, you know, is ridiculous. Alaskans, if they got their fair share, Alaska would no longer have to be a colony of the United States, and Alaskans would no longer have to be dependent on what pork barrel spending filters down. Of course, it doesn't filter down very far.
Another candidate for the Republican Party is Rick Sikma from North Pole, Alaska. Sikma, a minister with Freedom of Christ Ministries, says his experience in bringing people together to discuss and solve various issues makes him an ideal candidate. He says two main issues define his campaign.
First is the idea of problem that we're having with energy and the energy crisis. Working on that and working on a plan that would be able to make energy more affordable in our country and especially in the state of Alaska. And one of the other things is going according to the Constitution. I believe that we've drifted offline from that quite a ways, and I think that every bill that's passed needs to pass muster with the Constitution. If it doesn't, it shouldn't be passed.
Jerry Hykus, a drywall and framing contractor from Palmer, joined the race because he feels government officials are abusing their authority and stripping Americans of their rights.
I'd like to see us get back to the Constitution the way it was written. I'd like to see our state's rights come back to us. They've been abused by the federal government. And there's a lot of details in the Constitution that they're just not adhering to anymore, and they just choose to ignore.
Hykus plans to put forward a national ballot referendum where Americans will vote on 13 of what he sees as the most important issues to the country, including abortion, the Iraq War, and ANWR. Hykus says the government should not be able to overturn such a vote at any level. Michael Corey, a lawyer from Anchorage, threw his hat into the ring in order to gain some experience campaigning. He says Alaska needs a representative who will carefully manage the state's resources.
I think what is very important to Alaska right now is to make sure that the representation in Washington understands that our economic viability depends on the sensible development of natural resources.
Corey says the unfortunate truth of political campaigns is that new but qualified candidates have a hard time gaining recognition among voters.
I think it's a tragedy that you have to spend so much money to get the name recognition. I clearly, after having met some of these folks who are in the running for various office, I can tell you that name recognition does not equate to capability to do the job.
Of the four candidates, only Hykus has run for office previously. The statewide primary is Tuesday, August 26th. In Anchorage, I'm Eli Meneker.
One of Alaska's busiest legislative primaries is in southeast Alaska. Two Democrats and two Republicans are seeking to represent Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell, and several smaller communities in House District 2. We have a pair of reports. The first from Ed Schoenfeld. He focuses on the two Democrats in the race.
Lily Herwald and Marco Dapsevich are longtime Sitka residents. Herwald is a grant writer for the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium and former manager of Sitka's public radio station. Dapsevich is a commercial fisherman and former postman in his second term as Sitka's mayor. Both have good things to say about the incumbent, Wrangell Republican Peggy Wilson, but both say it's time for a change. Herwald says the district's representative needs to reach out more to other legislators.
Many folks encouraged me to run and stated that they were really not satisfied and haven't felt that Peggy has done as much for the district as we need, the fear that our district is being marginalized and we need a stronger advocate.
She says her grant writing success shows she can persuade people. Dapsevich points to Southeast Alaska's dropping population and the prospect of losing power during reapportionment. He says the area needs a different style of representation.
We need to look beyond just District 2, and people think in terms of you're there to represent your district and you're there to represent the state. But more importantly, I think what District 2 needs is somebody that will represent the region.
Dapsevich has been a controversial mayor at times, overseeing contentious meetings and drawing opposition on development and fisheries issues. But he has no apologies for his leadership style.
You have to be firm, you have to be tenacious, and you can't irritate people is the bottom line. You have to be able to work with them. And at the end of the day, whether you agree politically or disagree politically, you still need to be able to shake hands, walk out of there, and have a relationship between the two. And I think that's one of the things that's missing there.
Herwald says she presents a professional demeanor and takes a more collaborative approach to solving problems.
I look to respect people through all course of debate and dialogue. I have the ability to work with people from a wide variety of backgrounds. I believe you can be respected if you fight hard and advocate hard for your district, and that's what I would do. But you must be respectful to get consensus.
Herwald has been the more active campaigner, something Dapsevich does not dispute. Finance reports also show she's raised far more money. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
The two Republicans vying for House Seat 2 are basing their campaigns on residency and experience. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
District 2 Representative Peggy Wilson of Wrangell has served 8 years in the Alaska legislature, representing Petersburg, Wrangell, Sitka, and several nearby communities. Before moving to Alaska in 1993, Wilson served 4 years in the North Carolina legislature. She's a nurse by profession.
And I kind of have gone from helping people in the hospital to get well to working in District 2 to help people get things accomplished that they can't always do on their own.
Wilson's Republican primary opponent is new to politics, but not to Southeast Alaska. Stephen Samuelson was born and raised in Petersburg. He currently works as a retail associate at Petersburg's Hammer and Weekon hardware store. He also serves on the board of directors for that local business. Samuelson is from a fishing family and has worked as a commercial fisherman, whale watching guide, and as a nonprofit fundraiser for Petersburg Mental Health Services.
The reason I'm running for this seat is because I believe that Southeast and this district has done a good job at taking care of education and healthcare. And I think it's time that we focus now more on the resources and transportation issues.
One difference between Wilson and Samuelson was their relative experience. Wilson emphasized her tenure as a four-term Alaska lawmaker.
Something that I'm very good at is working in Juneau, working with the legislators. I know which ones I can trust, which ones will stab you in the back. Whenever there's a problem with something, I know which person to call. And I really don't think that now is the time to change horses in the middle of the stream.
Meanwhile, Samuelson stressed his work in private sector businesses like commercial fishing.
What I've learned through that experience is the complicated web that the whole process of bringing that, catching the fish and getting it home is about. And being in that seat, when things come up, I know the people that I can ask. I know the people that I can trust and talk to and move things ahead, making sure that the fishing game is funded so that we don't lose fisheries.
The primary is August 26th. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Attention voters, Tuesday, August 26th is primary election day. If you need language or other assistance while voting, you may ask the election board or bring a person of your choice to assist you. For additional information or other accommodations, please contact the Division of Elections at 907-465-4611, TTY TDD 907-465-3020. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
Great weekdays begin with the most up-to-date local news and information on APRN's Alaska Morning News. The Alaska Morning News, the news you wake up to.
This week on AK, Alaska's Constitution. We'll talk to the people who helped hammer out a blueprint for the state and find out which of their decisions are still in play. That's coming up on this week's Encore edition of AK from APRN.
The primary will have a special significance in Bethel and the Lower Kuskokwim. Democratic Representative Mary Nelson is not running for re-election after a decade of service. Three candidates are now vying to take her place, and all are running as Democrats. That means the primary winner will go uncontested in the general election. KYUK's Shane Iverson has the story.
The candidates are all running under the same party, but they are offering voters distinct approaches on how they would operate in the state capitol. If the campaign is any indication, the political heavyweight of the field is Bob Herron. He's been living in Bethel for 30 years, and by most accounts, he's done well for himself, something he pointed to in a live radio forum.
This country, this region, these people, they provide an opportunity. And if you're willing to work and enjoy this region, you will have a successful life, and that's what I've had.
Herron is out-earning and outspending his rivals by a long shot, and he's got the backing of some major political figures like former Governor Tony Knowles. His latest newspaper ad features endorsements from several local leaders. Herron's a former Bethel City manager. With energy prices almost doubling last month, Herron said he's the kind of effective problem solver that can direct funds towards rural Alaska. On the issues, Herron obviously stands apart from his opponents on mining. The proposed Donlin Creek gold mine is being explored just a few villages upriver from the boundary of House District 38. Herron says he'd like to see an independent environmental impact statement before the mine is constructed.
This is borrowed from a village elder. The facts will find the truth. And so if we have an independent one, we'll find out if it's really a good deal.
And if it's a good deal, Herron says the developer should go for it and the Delta should try to maximize the benefits. He says he'd push for the mine developers to help reduce energy costs for local residents.
I think they should make a financial contribution for hydro, wind power, tidal, and other forms of alternative energy.
One of Herron's opponents is Eric Middlebrook. Middlebrook says the mine could have some financial benefits, but not for the House district they are trying to represent.
Most of the benefit would go to the villages upriver. If you look at their current hiring practices, I don't think that we're going to see a whole lot of hiring in this region.
Middlebrook is currently serving as Bethel's mayor. Like Herron, he moved to the region a few decades ago. But on the political scene, he's the newbie. And on the issue of Donlin Creek, he leaves no room for confusion.
I have taken a strong stand in opposition to the development of Donlin Creek mine. Because of the risks involved with it, I do not think they are worth the benefits.
The position is in line with his political message. Middlebrook owns and operates a small air conditioning and refrigeration business. He is introducing himself as an everyday kind of person and says he would make policy accordingly. As stories of political corruption continue to dominate the headlines, Middlebrook says voters don't have to worry about backroom deals if they put him in office.
When companies that have influence in the legislature come looking for sweet deals at the cost of everyday people and small business, think of who will consider you first.
The third candidate running is Tony Vasca, and like Middlebrook, he is also courting votes from those against Donlin Creek.
I think if the mine goes forward, it's going to have a devastating effect on the region.
All the candidates say they will work to protect subsistence hunting rights, but Vasca takes it a step farther. He says he lives and breathes subsistence.
I eat dibba upriver. We call it uksunnak. Those are good things. This is my life. And when I go home, I'm still here. And that's the point.
Vasca is the only Alaska native running for the House seat. A Yupik born in Kalskag, he is also the only candidate originally from the area. He has not spent any money campaigning and is instead counting on his recognition to earn him votes. Vaska served in the legislature many years ago, but he says he'd still be the best advocate for the Kuskokwim when he's in Juneau.
They will know that I'm from Bethel. There won't be any question. And you have to project that image to people, and it has to be positive.
Whether it's Vaska, Heron, or Middlebrook, House District 38 will know who their next representative is after the primary election. That election happens statewide on Tuesday, the 26th. In Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
The Alaska campaign staff of Senator Barack Obama spent yesterday in Barrow talking to residents and meeting local leaders. KBRW's Janelle Everett reports.
About 60 Barrow residents attended a potluck with three staff members from the Alaska Obama for America campaign. One of them is Barrow Elder Rex Okakuk, who is a delegate at the National Democratic Convention in Denver next week. A retired whaler, Okakuk says this is the first national convention he has attended as a delegate.
I'm very excited because I'm probably the first whaler to ever go to a convention like this, and have a lot of media that's going to cover the convention. It'll help us, give us an opportunity to educate more people through the media.
Some delegates will have the opportunity to meet and talk to Senator Obama during the convention. Okakuk says there are two issues he would like to see the next president address.
I think to me the one that I've been talking a lot about is resource development, especially ANWR, because we've been advocating for economically safe development, and ANWR is such a place. And the other issue that I'm constantly working on is the health issue, most particularly the cancer. In Alaska, we have 30% more cancer than rest of America, and that's a very high rate.
Jeff Gertz, Alaska Communications Director for Obama for America, says residents throughout the day repeated those same concerns: high energy costs, inadequate health care. Gertz says the presumptive Democratic presidential candidate wants to hear concerns from Americans who have not had a voice.
The fact that, you know, the campaign is sending staff out here is representative of the fact that he's willing to listen to folks and pay attention to some of the unique problems that people are facing here.
The Obama staff plans to visit several other rural Alaskan communities, including Kotzebue, Dillingham, and Bethel, where they plan to travel up the Kuskokwim River, stopping at other villages along the way. Reporting from Barrow, I'm Janelle Everett.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Emily Schwing in Homer, Adam Kane in Dillingham, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Shane Iverson in Bethel, and Janelle Everett in Barrow. APRN's Eli Menneker reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Gooseberry Peter. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the University of Alaska College Savings Plan, providing tax-advantaged college savings options for Alaska families. T. Rowe Price Investment Services Incorporated, distributor, underwriter. Information at 1-888-4 and then Alaska.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.